This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's something scary happening in New York, but it's happening in the United States of America. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about wins from the Supreme Court. We had a good day today. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right. So if you read a bunch of history or watch a bunch of history documentaries, it's not like you have to read it anymore, but If you're at all a fan of history or a student of history, you'll see consistent themes that, you know, the same kind of thing seems to happen here. And then, you know, 500 years later in a totally separate place, the same kind of things seem to happen there. This is how it goes. There are themes. And so let's talk for a second about the Nazis. Let's start there. You know, when you bring up Nazis, everybody immediately thinks of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi army and World War II and Holocaust and all those other things. And well, all that stuff is obviously true, but do you know what the Nazis were in the beginning? They were barroom entertainment, for lack of a better way to put it. They had all these beer halls in Germany. And they would go give these loud speeches and beer halls. You know, these people were to blame. These people were to blame. They were small. They were insignificant, really. Now, they were committed, but they were small. They were insignificant. How insignificant did the authorities in Germany think they were? Well, Hitler actually tried to spark a revolution. Maybe you've heard of it before. It's called the beer hall putsch. Putsch with a T, by the way. It's a revolution. Tried to spark a revolution, the beer hall putsch. The Germans, of course, arrested him, threw him in prison for a while. That's where he wrote Mein Kampf. But then they just let him out. Ah, whatever. You did your time. Go on. Get out there, Tiger. Not that worried about it. Just a small, fairly insignificant group of committed people. And 5 minutes later, they ran everything. Absolutely everything. Soviet Union. The Bolsheviks, the communists. We think of them now as, you know, the Soviet Union, this all-power monolithic communist party that ruled everything with an iron fist, controlled everything top to bottom. And of course, that's what they became. Do you know that they were also at one point teeny tiny, insignificant, laughed at, scoffed at? Oh, there's like five of them. Who cares? Totally dismissed. They're too radical. Too radical. They love using those terms. Too radical. They're too crazy. The people will never buy into that. 15 minutes later, they're butchering millions of people, torturing many of them just for fun. 15 minutes later. Be very, very careful. Very careful. With these insurgent political movements of committed nut jobs, be very careful not to dismiss it. And I'll tell you something else. I saw, I think it was on social media yesterday, the Republicans in Washington, D.C., after the commies had these wins in New York City, which we're about to talk about here in a second. I saw that the Republicans in Washington, D.C., they went and put flowers at the door of Hakeem Jeffries. Of course, Hakeem Jeffries, minority leader in the House of Representatives, the top Democrat in the House. And what were they doing? Were they trying to troll him? Hey, Hakeem, you're in trouble now. These guys can't win. Ha, ha, ha. This is going to only hurt you in the end. Ha, ha, ha. Life is good. Be very, very careful celebrating these people winning. I know what you're thinking. And look, hey, three of them just won congressional primaries in New York. They're winning statewide seats in New York, committed communists. And I know maybe you're saying to yourself, that's New York. I don't live in New York. What's the big deal? I don't live in New York. I don't really care. These kinds of revolutions always start somewhere. Mao's started way out in the countryside, in the hinterlands. Wasn't even in a big city. And because of that, the powers that be dismissed the communists to some farmers. What are we worried about? Well, 50 million dead bodies later, it turned out there was a reason to worry. Here's the communist mayor of New York City.
We have to continue to elect more socialists, and we have to ensure that we are unapologetic about our socialism. There are also other issues that we firmly believe in, whether it's BDS, right, or whether it's the end goal of seizing the means of production, where we do not have the same level of support at this very moment. And what I want to say is that it is critical that in the way that we organize, in the way that we set up our work and our priorities, that we do not leave any one issue for the other, that we do not meet a moment and only look at what people are ready for, but that we are doing both of these things in tandem. Because it is critical for us to both meet people where they're at and to also organize for what is correct and for what is right, and to ensure that over time we can bring people to that issue.
Mayor of New York City, did you know that he was elected with the very vocal backing of New Yorkers like Attorney General Tish James? She came out there and she backed this guy. Hey, he's young. He's smiling. He's charismatic. Woo! Today, Tish James came out and complained. What's he doing? He's endorsing these radicals. These radicals are winning. Tish James should have listened to me. You should be afraid of these people. And please keep in mind, these are demonic people who will butcher people, torture people. I know you don't think that. This is America. It's New York. He's a mayor. She's a congresswoman. These people have the exact same sick demonic religion flowing through their souls that Vladimir Lenin did so many years ago. This woman, as you look at this woman, I want you to know that this woman, she's going to win her general election. This woman is about to walk into the United States House of Representatives, the same place Thomas Jefferson used to sit. And this woman is about to have sway over the entire United States of America. Here she is.
Ms. Chevalier, you recently said on WNYC Radio that defendants who commit crimes should not be deported after serving time. Why is that?
It cannot both be that a person who has citizenship is tried and convicted in one way, and a person who does not have citizenship is tried, convicted, and then forced to also endure another type of punishment on the basis of where they were born.
She founded an organization whose stated goal, and I want to make sure I read this, is the total eradication of Western civilization. Now she's going to the United States House of Representatives. Remember that clip? She was asked, the World Cup's going on right now. Hey, who are you rooting for in the World Cup?
World Cup is here. The first match this weekend at MetLife Stadium taking place in New Jersey, even though some people say it is technically New York. But what do you think will win it all? Who are you rooting for?
Oh, I like Mexico.
Mexico, there you go.
I'm rooting for Senegal.
Senegal, okay.
United States House of Representatives. Claire Valdez is also about to walk into the United States House of Representatives. Here's what she's about.
Immigration in a different way. You know, we hear all these, you know, white conservative men talk about who does and does not belong here. And look, this nation was founded on genocide and the mass displacement of people. It's just the history. And to say that some people cannot belong here, it's like, come on. Like,
you can leave first is what you mean.
You can show yourself the door. This is a nation that that should be welcoming people here, that want to the people who come here to build better lives and for themselves and their families to deserve real dignity, deserve to stay here, and we should be welcoming them. So just
don't dismiss those two women. They're young, dumb, they're just naive, too radical. They're going to cost the Democrat Party votes. Okay. These are all things that have been said about young upstart insurgencies for a long time. They're not a problem until they're a big problem. Here's Aber Kawas heading to the New York State Senate.
And finding that, like, you know, the system of capitalism and racism and white supremacy, et cetera, have all, and Islamophobia have all been used, you know, to colonize lands, right, to take resources from other people. And so this is like a long trajectory. And we're just seeing the manifestations of that continuation, right, with 9/11. And so a lot of times when people are asking us to respond about, you know, attack, right, when if you look back, like, historically, right, you know, a lot of us come from lands that were colonized, lands where wars are being waged, right, and a lot of times because of U.S. policy or the policies in Europe. And so I find that we can connect over that, but then also that the idea that we have to apologize for, like, a terror attack that, like, a couple of people did, and then there is no apologies or reparations for genocides and for slavery, et cetera, is something that I kind of find, like, reprehensible.
She's going to be casting votes very shortly that control the second most powerful state in the United States of America. Dan Goldman is one of those real scumbags in Washington, D.C. He's a Democrat. You've seen his stupid face on the news 10,000 times, trashing Trump every single day. Trump sucks, Trump sucks, Trump sucks. Well, he just lost his primary because the Democrat primary voter prefers this.
Solidarity is the force that we need to vanquish Trump's fascism. Yeah. Wow. To abolish ICE. Yeah. And to stand up to the billionaires who are rigging our economy against.
This is what the Democrat primary voter wants now. And this is most definitely what the foreigners they've brought into the country want now. This is going to pick up steam. This is not only happening in New York. It's happening across the United States of America. Maybe you're like me. Maybe you're sitting in a red state. I'm in Texas. And maybe you're thinking, whatever, it's New York. Don't care. I don't care. I don't care. Well, again, I just want to repeat to you before we go on. We'll talk to Lydia Moynihan in a second because she's in New York. I want to repeat to you again, it's not a problem until it's a really, really big problem. All right. Now, before we go talk to Lydia, probably have trouble sleeping at night now, but don't worry. Beam is here to help you. Dream powder from Beam is here to give you a wonderful night's sleep every single night. You see, there's all kinds of stuff that help you sleep. I know that. It's in the gas station. It's in the pharmacy. Doctor will give you something. You know what they all have? Drugs. You know what they all have in common as well? You feel like crap when you wake up. You don't feel rested. You feel tired and groggy. But Dream Powder from Beam is a cup of hot chocolate. It's got all these different things in it. Reishi, melatonin, and you're going to sleep like a baby and wake up ready to go. Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. I have so much I could say, and I think only about half of it would get me in trouble. You know what? I'm just going to go to Lydia right now. Joining me now, Lydia Moynihan, reporter for the New York Post. Okay, Lydia, I read your article, great article, by the way, and I laughed the entire time, the absurdity of all of it, but it's your story. What am I looking at there?
Yeah, I guess in this universe, the most ironic outcome is indeed correct. When I first got this tip, I kind of couldn't believe it because it just seemed too improbable that this woman who over the weekend, I think we all saw this clip of her disgustingly emptying garbage all over the street. I mean, probably 1,000 pieces of garbage, proudly smiling for the camera, walking away. And then another clip of her sitting on the subway, obviously having taken that trash can. And it was so brazen and horrific. And it makes you think, what kind of person would possibly do that in broad daylight and do that proudly? And as it turns out, we learned it was a woman who spent her career in DEI and was most recently employed by JP Morgan. When we first reached out to JP Morgan on Monday, they said they were reviewing the incident. And by Tuesday, the next day, they had indeed fired that employee, which of course was the right decision, because how could somebody who has such disregard and disrespect for their environment and for the people who have to clean up that mess, how could you possibly trust them at a corporation, particularly a bank, where you're supposed to be responsible for other people's money? And I think, you know, obviously, I'm not saying everyone who works in DEI is a bad apple, but it gets at this larger truth. And I think this is why the story has gone so viral and resonated, is there is this worldview of sort of oppressed versus oppressor that's inherent in the DEI industrial complex. And it essentially is arguing that it's the system that's to blame. There are structural racism, there's structural sexism, there's all of these issues. And she obviously views herself as somebody who's oppressed. And that essentially justifies any behavior that she wants to get away with. So in that situation, because she views herself as the victim, she doesn't think that she's done anything wrong. And it's also interesting because doing some of the research for the story, we went through old bios, you know, her old LinkedIn profile. All of these have been removed in the following days. But the bios that she has put out there paint her as somebody who's spreading light, who is making a positive impact on the world around her. And it's just shocking to see that disconnect between somebody who thinks that she's making such a wonderful, positive difference in the world. Somebody, bear in mind, who, if you look at a lot of people in DEI, they're pushing these policies like higher minimum wage, healthcare for all. They would say that they're trying to make the world better for the little guy, and yet has no understanding or concept of her own actions and the reality that somebody who's not making a lot of money is going to have to clean up after you. And I think that disconnect is just so shocking, but frankly, kind of representative of the entire DEI industrial complex.
Lydia, one, the spreading light thing just actually cracks me up to no extent. It's such a stupid hippie phrase. And obviously that woman is spreading a lot more marshmallow cream than she is light. But we're going to set that aside for a moment. The DEI working at JP Morgan thing is something that a lot of people have brought up several times in recent days. And it's a valid point that while people's sons and daughters who are capable, who work hard, who've done the right things, are graduating college and then moving back into mommy's basement, then you see this commie freak has a job at the largest bank in the world, if not one of the largest banks in the world. How much of this is in corporate America while capable young men and women sit at home eating peanut butter sandwiches?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, because I think especially after the election, everyone assumed, oh, DEI is dead, Trump is in office, things have changed. But that's not the reality of the situation. These programs that were especially built up during 2020, 2021, they still are largely intact. And the challenge actually for these corporations is to dismantle them. I think a lot of people, like a Jamie Dimon, are not mourning her departure, but they're unsure how to sort of get rid of these people and not get sued for cause. And so, frankly, I think the bank wasn't sad to be getting rid of her. I think a lot of these people, they would like to oust. But again, if you're a bank, people are so litigious in this day and age, especially in a state like New York City, that they fear if they fired her, they could be sued for wrongful termination or discrimination or any number of things. And so I think in some cases, it's just easier to keep people employed and just continue with business as usual rather than face the backlash and the fury of somebody who might get fired. But I do think this space is shrinking, but it absolutely still exists. And bear in mind too, I mean, a lot of these people are still involved in making hiring decisions, in sort of corporate culture decisions, in what the bank decides to invest in, or not invest in, I should say, but donate to, and some of those issues. So these folks are still very much playing a role in the economy. And, you know, the other thing too that I actually did wrestle for a moment, I'm like, I don't like the idea of doxing people. I don't like the idea that one stupid moment should forever ruin your life. But I think in this case, it was clear that she was proud of it. There wasn't a sense of regret. And I also think that as a society, we need to have standards, right? We were so amazed when the Japanese came over during the World Cup and were cleaning garbage and doing that because they wanted to show us respect. And that's what you need to have a successful civilization. You can't have a successful or good country when people are that selfish and that entitled and don't think of anyone besides themselves. And of course, there were that day, obviously, thousands and thousands of people who did the right thing, who put garbage in the garbage can. And all it takes is one person to ruin it for everyone else. And this is why I think the broken windows policing matters so deeply, because these little things are easy to dismiss, right? It's not like she murdered somebody, no one got kidnapped. But these little incremental things paint a picture of what we accept in our society. And even today, I was on the subway and I saw five kids not pay, jump over the turnstile. And the more that that is tolerated and accepted, the more that the envelope will continue to be pushed. And when you see that, it makes you lose any respect for the system. It makes you feel like a chump for doing the right thing. And so that's the reason where I think these people do need to have serious consequences for this kind of action, because we just can't tolerate this as a society.
I can't believe you still live there, especially after the elections Tuesday. Lydia, what happened? What is happening inside New York, inside the Democrat Party?
Well, I'm still here. I do feel that it's important to fight for our cities and to not just leave and run away to a farm, although that sounds very appealing. But look, what happened, big picture, is massive amounts of immigration. 40% of the people in New York now are foreign born. They weren't raised with American values. They don't love this country. And in case, I'm sure you've gotten at this at length, but people like Avia Chevalier, who were elected, hate America. They hate Western civilization. They want to use violence to pick apart our country. They're very clear about it. And you're not going to convince them. The only real way that you can address this is by making sure you don't bring in more people who hate America. So look, I don't think that this is representative of what is happening in the country writ large, but I think it's something that we should absolutely see as a cautionary tale and absolutely be alarmed about and nip in the bud, because this can spread and metastasize. And so I think, you know, when somebody wins the Democratic primary, essentially in New York, it means you've won the general election. And I think Congress should say, we're not gonna seat this woman. She should not be in the halls of Congress if she hates America. We as a country cannot survive by empowering and letting somebody like her, who is abundantly clear, she's not hiding it, she hates America, she wipes her hand on the American flag, we should not be giving her the power to legislate and make decisions about the future of our country. And so I think Republicans need to really grow a spine and clap back here. I will note, though, I mean, it was a very small minority of people who elected her. These elections are decided by thousands of votes because there is such a low turnout for those primaries. And I think in the coming months and years, we will see, you know, in embracing these woke politicians who have PhDs and don't live in the real world and are far more concerned about Palestine than they are with somebody's electricity bill, that's going to alienate historical Democratic base voters. So a lot of working class voters who would have voted for a Democrat might see that and think, wait, this is crazy. She's not going to make my life better. She cares more about open borders and immigrants who aren't even here yet than she does about me. And so I think that is going to create a fissure, and that's an opportunity for Republicans to try and make their case about why they are the party that should win.
How sure are you that this is something that's going to bother the Democrat primary voter? Because it's not just New York City. Across the United States of America, the Democrat primary voter continues to go to the polls and vote for whoever's furthest to the left. This is not a New York tale. It's a California tale. It's a Texas tale. Pick your blue district. This is what the Democrat primary voter wants. They love socialism. They don't like capitalism. All the poll numbers show it.
Yeah, it's true. No, you make a very good point about socialism. I also think that there is a real issue, and we of course saw this with Mamdani, where most people don't actually turn out to vote in this instance. It's decided by oftentimes people who are unemployed or students or don't have a job to get to.
Yeah, losers.
I don't know that it's completely representative of most people, but once you empower somebody who's that far left, yeah, they can stand to win in the general election, and they influence the dialogue and the debate. And she's going to be making all of the rounds on the Sunday shows, and people like Jeffries, in order to stay relevant, are going to try and kowtow to someone like her. And of course, it's very ironic because in so doing, Hakeem Jeffries thinks that he's going to gain power, right? If you're a moderate Democrat, you want to make sure that you open the tent and allow these people to come in. But it's very short-sighted because, as you and I know, once you let the camel's nose into the tent, he's going to get kicked out. He's going to get replaced. They're not going to tolerate a moderate Democrat like him. They want to get rid of him just as much as they want to get rid of Republicans.
Lydia, keep your head down. I appreciate you. All right. We have a lot to get to. We had a big day at the Supreme Court. We're going to get all boned up on all those cases. Before we do that, I want to get you boned up on your testosterone levels, which are dropping fast. We are drinking estrogen. I want you to understand that. It's in the water supply. There's no avoiding this. You shower in it. You drink it. We are not treating it out of the water. It's synthetic estrogen. What's happening to us? Well, we've lost 50% of our testosterone in the last 50 years. The reason you don't have energy anymore, you're in a down mood all the time, all these things, is because your levels are way off. Young men, too. Don't think I'm just talking to 70-year-olds here. Young men. Estrogen is attacking your T levels. We have to fix it naturally. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk, clinically tested. 20% increase in your testosterone levels in 90 days. That's a male vitality stack. That's what I take. They have female vitality stacks for the ladies. Chalk lip powder if you want to start your day with vitamins and minerals. The hardcore anti-communists at Chalk have what you need. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. It's Supreme Court season, if you're a political person. For other people, it's summer. For nerds like me, it's Supreme Court season. We got four opinions today and big ones. Did they go our way? I think so, but I don't know what I'm talking about. Robert Gouveia does, joining me now, host of Watching the Watchers, criminal defense lawyer. All right, Rob, did it go our way? What happened today? I give you the floor.
Yes, we had some big wins today, and two of them were related to immigration. The first big one was called Mullen versus Doe, and it was a 6-3 decision split along ideological lines. It was all about TPS. People know it as temporary protected status. This concept that was supposed to be temporary, where the government would bring people in from other countries that have had problems. In this case, it was about the Haitians and the Syrians, but it turned out not to be so temporary. And for a long time, our government just kept postponing their status so that they could be in the country essentially indefinitely. And in this case, we all remember the 2010 Haitian earthquake. It was devastating, caused a ton of damage out there. And so Obama introduced TPS status for the Haitians and brought them in. And the earthquake, of course, happened a long time ago. Now it's about 16 years, but they have still been granted status. So for many, it's just backdoor amnesty, essentially. And what happened is Trump came out when he came back into office, and Kristi Noem did a new assessment of the status and canceled it back in 2025. And the litigation has been going on all the way since then. And what happened at the lower level court until the Supreme Court came back down and just hammered them, they said at the lower court that the president really couldn't even cancel the status, saying that they had to continue to be here pending the continuing litigation. And the lower level judge, her name was Anna C. Reyes. And what's so interesting about this case is that by law, the statute says that Homeland Security Secretary, the executive branch, they can make a determination about whether TPS is still necessary. They make a determination is what the statute literally articulates. And in the law, it says that judges can't override that decision. Once that determination is made, some lower level judge can't do that. But a Biden appointee, a judge who is the first Latina, first LGBTQ judge out of DC, she took a look at Christy Noem's decision. Christy said, you know, Haiti's got its problems, no question about it, but it is now capable to have their citizens back. And what happened before we even got here is Biden, back in 2021, he reinstituted temporary status. And the original reason was for the earthquake. But then what happened is Biden came back and he said they still deserve status because of economic disasters and because of political instability and because of COVID, which basically could have applied to anybody, anywhere, at any time. We all have economic concerns in our countries. So what ended up happening is this whole thing had been paused. Christy Noem canceled status for the Haitians and the Syrians, and a Biden judge stayed the entire cancellation. So in other words, you cannot remove them. You cannot make temporary status actually temporary. Supreme Court got the case, went all the way up, and 6-3, Alito came down, delivered the decision. And it was great because he went through with a fine-tooth comb and he articulated all of the lower level judges' rationale for pausing what the Trump administration can do and confirmed that the law means the law. And when the law says that a judge can't review the final decision by the secretary, that's exactly what it means. And ultimately said that her stay was invalid. And the judge at the lower level was really trying to latch on to a bunch of very sneaky things. So she knew that the law said that she can't substitute her judgment for the executive branch's judgment. And this has been a big problem all across the country for over a year and a half now, where judges just don't like the decision that was made and then insert themselves into the analysis. But she was being clever about it. She was saying, well, I'm not overriding the final determination. I'm just saying that the process that you used in order to come to this determination was fraudulent. It was not legitimate. You didn't go in and really investigate the true nature of Haiti, or you didn't go consult with all of the necessary agencies in order to come to this conclusion. And really, there was a lot of argument from her that this was also anti-white, that this was racist, and so on and so forth. So the Supreme Court came down today, 6-3, got some very angry dissents from the left-wing judges, but said that in the law where it says judicial review is barred and the determination by the executive branch is in effect, you have to defer to that. You can't override that because you don't like it. And so long story short, what that's going to mean is that the cancellation of TPS status for the Haitians and for the Syrians and many others who are making these similar claims can be canceled once the secretary does an analysis, comes to the conclusion that this no longer serves American interests as they've done here. So the right people are very upset about this. Chuck Schumer's unhappy about it. A lot of the extreme pro-amnesty factions of the right are very unhappy about this. But as we know, it's temporary. It's supposed to be temporary for limited purposes, and it's been exploited for basically any reason. If you have any instability, it's a justification to come here. And so that got reversed. And that was the first big one on immigration. But the second one was another case called Mullen versus Al Otro Lado. This was another 6-3 decision. And we, going back to the Biden years, just like we did with the prior case, we saw hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people piling up at the border to try to get in. And the way that they were handling this back during those years is when people would come in, they would basically say that even if they're not in the United States, and there's this keyword in or at the border, are you in the United States? Are you at the border? Are you near the border? And in the law, it says that if you are in the United States, then you can start to apply for asylum status. You can claim that you're a refugee. You can say that I have a credible fear. And once you're in the United States, there's a whole slew of other laws that are implicated that allow you then to meet with immigration, make a claim that you have credible fear that you're going to be persecuted and that you need to stay in America. And we can't really get rid of you. You have to, you're here until you're processed, and it imposes a bunch of obligations on the federal government. And credible fear, you know, for these people can be basically anything. If you're a part of a group that's under attack, if you are part of a religion or you're part of a race or there's something bad going on, then you can just claim credible fear and there's nothing that we can do. So under Biden, what they were doing is people would pile up at the border and they would essentially just process them all because they would say that they're at the border and so they have to accept them. You can come in, you can still be in Mexico, you can be under a bridge in Texas or on the other side of the Rio Grande. Doesn't matter because you're there. That effectively means that you're in the United States, geographically speaking. And so it's almost like taking a number at a deli. You just go up there, you come to the border, you are now in the United States, so you take a number and you're going to be processed under asylum laws, which are very burdensome and require a lot from our end. So what happened is Trump came in, of course, and starts to actually read the law, read the rules, and sees that the statute that was passed by Congress in order to trigger all of these benefits says you have to be in the United States and in, like, IN, literally geographically inside the United States. So once that change was made, that means that anybody who's coming to the border is no longer subject to all of the asylum protections. You're coming to the border, but you're at the border. You're near the border. You're in Mexico still, and you don't get the right to invoke all of these asylum protections and just take a number and wait in line until our government just piles you inside. So Alito came down and he was a very, you know, simple opinion in this. He just went through mechanically and he said, yeah, in says this. He pulled up a bunch of dictionary definitions from Oxford and Webster and many others that said in means actually inside. And he gave us a bunch of analogies. Like if you're at someone's front door, you're not in their home. You only are in their home once you cross over. Or if you're at the 1 yard line in a football game, you are not in the end zone. Even though you're close, it doesn't count. And a linebacker, a defensive end, somebody can come and block you from getting into the end zone. And that doesn't change the analysis. So he went through and was very clear. In means in. And so if you're coming to the border as part of one of these, you know, hordes of people who we saw came under Joe Biden, you don't get the same benefit of the doubt that you're in the country, geographically speaking. And so he reversed the lower court of appeals, which apparently can't read and doesn't understand these spatial terms. And so that was another great decision, which really creates another disincentive to even come to the border. Because originally what would happen is people would just come in, get close enough, and then invoke all of these protections. And Sonia Sotomayor, one of the top leftist judges who is on the court, she was furious about this. And as usual, she just unleashed a sob story saying, well, you know, we're incentivizing all these people to come and they make these long treks and they get attacked on the way, they get abused on the way and all of these things. And now we're just going to turn them around and just kind of reject them at the border, which is very interesting because, of course, their policies incentivized that. They created an environment where people would abandon their homelands, you know, take their kids with them, go on this long trek and expose themselves to all of this abuse, and then expect us to just kind of open up the door and let everybody in. So Trump reversed it, and the Supreme Court affirmed that is the correct interpretation of the law. So 6-3 on that. And during the deliverance of the opinions today, apparently Sonia Sotomayor was furious about this. And so she read large portions of her dissent, which is not uncommon. But Judge Alito, who wrote the majority opinion, apparently had some comments for her after she said that. He said something like, well, if I would have known you would have done that, you were going to waste all of our time that delayed the release of the other opinions, that I would have come out and said a lot more than I currently did. So both of those cases have resulted in Chuck Schumer and many others who are just very upset about it because they take away some of the tools that they were using to facilitate the demographic shift and the invasion of foreign countries into America, which are now coming to a close. And the other real big one today, there was another fourth one about Monsanto and about state rights and state preemptions. And we can come back to that, but it's less interesting. There was another big one about Hawaii. And so in Hawaii, there was a major Second Amendment victory as well, where Hawaii said that your Second Amendment rights can essentially be infringed. And everywhere else, we see that the default presumption after a prior Supreme Court case called Bruin is that you can have a firearm outside the homes for personal protection and for self-defense. And so what Hawaii did is they inverted the default. So the standard rule is that when you go out, the presumption is that you have your Second Amendment right. You can go onto private property that is open to the public and you can bring your firearm there unless you are prohibited, unless you're excluded from doing that. And many people have seen this in bars and locations where they say on a big sign, no firearms allowed. And so in that instance, you can't bring your gun in. But Hawaii inverted that. And they said that the default rule is you cannot bring it anywhere, period, unless the private property owner allows you to do that and affirms the ability to come in with a firearm, which is a perversion of the Second Amendment. And so we saw the decision in that one was also 6-3. And it was a big one because they went through the history of Second Amendment jurisprudence. And Hawaii was trying to analogize back to other limitations and other laws that actually prohibited the ability to have firearms. And the court did away with some of their analogies, which is part of the process of coming to a legal conclusion, is to analogize back to historical traditions. In America, if there was a history of limiting the Second Amendment, then you could argue that that is valid now. But what they did is they were trying to tie it back to hunting limitations and poaching laws, all of which the court kind of did away with pretty quickly. But the interesting one was that the dissent, Ketanji and the leftist judges, were trying to invoke black codes, where after the Civil War, laws were passed to try to disarm the newly freed slaves and to disarm black people so that they could be more easily subjugated. And the Hawaiians, they were referencing those laws to say that that justified their new law. And so the court had a lot of fun with that one. Amy Coney Barrett wrote a concurring opinion. And ultimately, that law is unconstitutional. It's an infringement on your Second Amendment right. And so any other states that are trying these little kind of sneaky, you know, private property rights cases in order to infringe on the Second Amendment, the private property can't supersede the Second Amendment, and the court dropped a very nice decision on that one as well. So those were the three big ones. Then there was a Monsanto case, which is curious, but there's a federal rule that says when you're labeling pesticides and fungicides, that the EPA really sets the standard for what needs to go on the label. And this was a case involving a guy who had cancer. He said he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma for using Roundup in his life for 20 years. Got cancer and then sued under state law and said that state law in Missouri, the tort law allowed him to sue Monsanto and to get a big victory and to basically claim $1 million settlement in response to them failing to label their product as being cancer causing. So it was a little bit more of a technical decision, but the court found 7-2. And this one was not ideological. It was an interesting split. We had Gorsuch joining with Ketanji in the dissent. And then we had the two leftist judges, Kagan and Sotomayor, joining in the majority, saying that the EPA and the federal law preempts the state rules. So since Congress has basically already decided on this, you can't sue under an alternative theory under state law. And so the guy with cancer loses, and Monsanto secures some additional immunity against these types of claims. So three real big decisions that I think impact a lot of people on immigration and the Second Amendment. Another one, which is more about litigation about, you know, glyphosate and labeling. But all in all, I think a very, very good day. And the pro-amnesty, pro-immigration crowd are very upset about everything that we saw come down today.
Freaking outstanding. It sounds like it was a good day. Rob, thank you so much for breaking that down, making it simple for morons like me. I appreciate you, brother. Please come back. It was a good day. I'm in a good mood. It was a good day. It's a good day to switch to Pure Talk, too. You know, these big wireless companies, on top of charging you way, way too much, you know they hate the country, right?
Do you remember what your wireless carrier was doing during the St. George Floyd protests? Go look it up. Do you know what your wireless carrier is doing this month during Pride Month with your money? Go look it up. I don't have to worry about my wireless carrier. Pure Talk is run by a Vietnam veteran. They're so patriotic, they love America and hire Americans. When it comes to Independence Day, yeah, that's a big deal around there. Last Independence Day, they handed out American flags to veterans. All this, they're on the same 5G network as one of the big guys. You can keep your phone, keep your number. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. I am so enjoying our 250th birthday celebrations, and I'm loving the flyovers.
News is boring
and tedious
and depressing
and makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth
and help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.